Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
Hello and blessings to all. Welcome to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our show tonight is sponsored by Starseed Gems. They're the proud sponsors of the 8th Annual Afterlife Conference this November 8th and 9th in Durham, North Carolina. And they can be found on the web at starseedgems.com. Our guest tonight is Lloyd Auerbach, and if you have a question, comment, or would like to talk to our guest, the toll-free number here is 888-627-6008. And, Bob, what's up with you today?
Well, I have something on my desk here. I was reading the newspaper a couple of days ago, and a story, there was a headline that caught my eye. It said, New Jersey nun moves closer to sainthood. And normally, don't read stories like that, but I was always curious how somebody gets to be named a saint, you know, by organized religion. So I always thought, well, you know, people must examine the lives that they led while they were alive, you know, and they did a lot of good deeds, a la Mother Teresa or whoever else, and somebody nominates them to become a saint, and people vote on it. I mean, that's the way I thought the process. I'm totally ignorant with that stuff. And I'm reading the article, and I was really surprised, I should say shocked, because it said that this particular nun that was closer to sainthood, it said the Vatican must...
Closer to sainthood. She's not yet a saint.
No.
Okay.
The Vatican must certify that his or her intercession has been posthumously responsible for one miracle. So this person, you know, is already deceased, and they want to see evidence that while deceased, she interceded and, you know, in the physical world.
How do you get evidence of that?
Well, in this particular case, the evidence came from this gentleman, when he was younger, was almost completely sightless. He had a degeneration, a macular degeneration, where his eyesight, he was very close to being totally blind. And a sister in a particular, in the school where he went, the Catholic school, handed him a prayer card and a relic taken from this deceased nun, and you know, said to go home and bring it to your mother, and then right after that he had this seemingly miraculous, you know, recovery, and his sight was restored. So they're taking that as evidence. But what I find so amazing is that how, on the one hand, do a lot of organized religions tell you that you should not communicate with the dead, that's sinful, and on the other hand, that's the way they examine whether they're going to make somebody a saint. Do they want to see evidence?
Well, did they send this kid home with the card and the relic and say, pray to this saint? I mean, because then essentially they're saying, go talk to the dead.
Well, this particular nun, this deceased sister, was obviously not a saint. She was just a deceased nun, and who, I guess, was well-respected. So they sent the kid home with items that she had owned while she was in the physical, including a prayer card. So I assume that they said, go home and pray and hold these relics. And, you know,
it's still not evidence that she, the deceased entity, healed him.
No, but that's the way that
that's the way they do it.
This committee is interpreting that, you know, so make, which is making her.
And look at the hundreds and gazillions of people who say, "Wow, this is wonderful!" And then the, when this nun gets her sainthood, and now she's going to be a recognized saint, and everybody's going to say, "Wow, look, we have a new recognized saint," and they're all going to recognize her as a saint based on.
Afterlife communication.
based on some random rules that somebody made up. But here we have scientists doing research that show that healing takes place. We have research that shows that we can communicate with the dead. And yet the same people who are buying into this are looking at what the scientists do and saying, poo, 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 couldn't possibly be.
Right. You know, so it's as if... these things don't happen all the time, you know. I mean, we see the case histories from all these researchers with these healings and with these communications with information that people couldn't possibly know that are far more astounding than this. But you know, a lot of people will read this and think, "Oh, wow, that's the first time this has ever happened," or, you know, everything is classified in that miracle category. But there are miracles that happen every day.
And not to say there aren't miracles, and not to say there are miracles, but if miracles happen every day, then they're very commonplace. And we see them. We've witnessed many of them. I know that if you want to talk about healing, and I know that, you know, to a lot of people, it's not a big deal because it's a cat. But our cat was healed from a disease that was going to be with that cat for the rest of its life on meds, and now it's all healed.
Yeah. Well, listen, people have miracles is a term that can apply to many things, and people that have a near death experience and move on catch glimpses of the next world. That you could say that's a miracle. You know,
it is a miracle.
People have a deathbed vision and they get visited by a deceased loved one. You know, that's a miracle. People turn on a recording device and hear their loved ones speak. That's a miracle.
It is a miracle. I would classify anything outside of what we know to be basic to the material world a miracle.
Right.
Everything's a miracle.
Yeah. Well, so what struck me the most was that I don't see how you could have it both ways. You know, you can't make somebody a saint based upon communication with the dead, and at the same time counsel people not to do that. You know, especially since in all religions, the prophets of old regularly communed with their ancestors. You know, so I just don't buy it. In terms of we mentioned near death experience, I should mention we probably mentioned on the show before, Dr. Sam Parnia, who did the AWARE study, which began 3 or 4 years ago, and it was a study about the near-death experiences, and it took place over 15 hospitals in the UK, the US, and Austria, and it examined 2,060 cases, and they finally now released the findings that show that, yes, patients did experience real events after, you know, they were clinically dead. They said that of those who survived, mostly cardiac, you know, situations, 46% experienced a broad range of mental recollections. 9% had experiences compatible with traditional definitions of the near-death experience, and 2% exhibited full awareness with explicit recall of seeing and hearing events or out-of-body experiences. So now they're, and this was a study that was done under obviously careful protocol design, and now they're officially presenting the evidence and saying, yes, indeed, which we all knew to begin with, but now it's going to be published in the scientific journals. So with that, you did mention our guest tonight is waiting in the wings, Lloyd Auerbach, and we are going to be talking about some fancy things, ESP and the ESP wars and psychic espionage. So stay with us, and we will be back with more about these unseen world forces in a few minutes. Take care.
Starseed Gems Studios in Cocoa, Florida fuses cremation ashes within art glass, making beautiful stones. The ashes are visible in the darkness and resemble a beautiful night sky. Starseed Gems, developed by the parents of a young man who passed away, are set in hand-sculpted silver and gold settings. Prices start at $150. Visit www.starseedgems.com or call 321-632-7770. That's www.starseedgems.com or 321-632-7770.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
Perhaps you have heard that there is scientific evidence of an afterlife, but you are confused. Plan to attend a landmark convention in Durham, North Carolina, November 8th and 9th, and let's clear up that confusion. Let an esteemed group of scientists from prestigious universities and institutions show you the way. This will be a gathering of the top organizations that have been researching afterlife evidence for decades, all coming together for the first time. Whether you want to learn about reincarnation, mediumship, apparitions, deathbed visions, near-death experiences, or phone calls from the dead, this is the place to be. The weekend will also include demonstrations of spirit communication by Forever Family Foundation certified mediums. Click on the events page at our website, foreverfamilyfoundation.org, to learn more about the conference weekend and the many additional events before and after the conference. Or call 631-425-7707 for more information.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a forum where individuals and families who have suffered the loss of a loved one can turn for support, information, and hope. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. The Forever Family Foundation is a joint effort of scientists, research mediums, and interested people who support the premise that life does not end with physical death. We wish to prove that the bond of the family cannot be broken, even by death. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707. Or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
For those just tuning in, our guest tonight is Lloyd Auerbach, and our sponsor is Starseed Gems. They're the proud sponsors of the 8th Annual Afterlife Conference this November 8th and 9th in Durham, North Carolina, and they can be found on the web at starseedgems.com. Bob?
Well, everybody knows our guest, Lloyd Auerbach, and in case you don't, he's best known as a field investigator and educator in the field of parapsychology. He's the author of 8 books, dozens of published articles on psychic and paranormal phenomena. He's appeared in hundreds of national and local TV shows and thousands of radio, podcast, and print interviews. He's the president of Forever Family Foundation. He's also a member of the board of directors at the Rhine Research Center. He's on the advisory board of the Winbridge Institute and on the Scientific Advisory Board of Forever Family Foundation. He is also a professional mentalist and psychic entertainer. And actually, this experience, combined with his broad knowledge of science, has been valuable to researchers as they design laboratory protocol. And just because he loves the work, in 2009, Lloyd became a professional chocolatier. Learn more about that on hauntedbychocolate.com. And the reason he's with us tonight is to talk about his new book, co-authored with Dr. Edwin May and Dr. Victor Rubel. It's called ESP Wars, East and West, an account of the military use of psychic espionage as narrated by the key Russian and American players. Website is mindreader.com, and welcome, Lloyd.
Thanks very much, Bob and Fran.
And so,
always a pleasure.
It's a pleasure to have you. And, you know, we're talking about the ESP wars now, and I know the subject matter is certainly nothing new to you, but ESP wars is a departure from all of your other books. So, what got you interested in the world of psychic espionage to begin with?
Well, in some respects, it's not that far a departure from, or certainly a couple of my earlier books, especially my psychic dreaming book. But I was interested in this, not so much the psychic espionage, but certainly the activities of remote viewers and the remote viewing research since the early 80s, since I was a graduate student. And we even had some of the key folks researching that, speaking at the graduate parapsychology program that existed at John F. Kennedy University back in the early 80s. So it's something I've had an interest in. We always suspected that some of the stuff was being done by the government back then. We just didn't, most of us in the field didn't suspect that it was our colleague Ed May, who we all got to know a little bit back in the 1980s, until, I guess you could say that they came out in 1995, which unfortunately coincided with the ending of the government-funded program, the Stargate program. Sometimes people confuse this stuff with The Men Who Stare at Goats, which was a comedy film with George Clooney, and of course a book as well about a different group of military people who on their own, it really wasn't a funded project, tried to learn, I guess you could say, a lot of Jedi tricks and martial arts type stuff. So the funded research is really about remote viewing and about, and there were some things related to that, but really in the U.S. it was about trying to see if people within the military or just average people could be trained or could be used or utilized to gather intelligence on distant locations without actually having to go there.
Yeah, of course, when we talk about intelligence in military terms, we think of, you know, you gaining information through your spy networks about the enemy. Most people think about getting this information from psychic means. So, I mean, how does that work? I mean, give us a little briefing about psychic espionage. I mean, how was it used? I mean, was it effective? That kind of thing.
Sure. The funded program did a couple things first. They really had to find possible viewers, and that was Russell Targ and Hal Puthoff in the early days. People have heard about them and SRI International doing research in remote viewing. And, you know, all along the process, by the way, with the psychic espionage work, the military use program, there was also more of a public research program. So we all knew Ed May was doing research on remote viewing, and Targ and Puthoff were doing research on remote viewing. We just didn't know that there was some of that. What they were doing was for classified reasons and with people who were not identified. Targ and Puthoff went through apparently 3,600 people after a survey of military personnel and related personnel, and they got down to 60, and then through a full-day seminar workshop with testing people, they got them down to 6, who were the initial viewers. And working with a psychic named Ingo Swann, who kind of was coming up with this methodology initially for remote viewing, somewhat from his out-of-body experience work, they came up with this very simple protocol, which they were also using in more public scientific research, to see if people could just sit down, blank their minds, and when given, you know, a target or in the actual research, the early research, they were told that one of the researchers would be sent to a location, and nobody would know where he was, and the question is, where is he now? So you'd have to focus on a beacon. For intelligence work, what ended up happening, and they were given tasks over the years from the Defense Department, the Defense Intelligence Agency, from different military units, from the CIA. They were given locations or targets specifically to focus in on where and this was what was really a problem in some respects, our normal means of intelligence gathering couldn't get any information. So in other words, we'd hit a brick wall with what they were trying to figure out, and so they passed it along to the remote viewers, figuring, you know, what, why not take a chance? And it was always the method of last resort for intelligence gathering. And still, they had a pretty good track record for actionable intelligence. In other words, intelligence that was actually verified later on or was able to be used in some way. Of a good 15% of the tasks had actionable intelligence, and actually was a little bit higher than that with accurate information. And then much bigger percentage that actually had some information, but it was not, let's say, it wasn't hugely useful in the process. Mm. It was just verified later on.
Right. What was fascinating to me as I read the book is that there were so many different hurdles that you had to overcome, you know, to get these programs not only up and running, but, you know, to get continuous funding. And there were always battles within the government, whether it be the Russian government or the U.S. government.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And as somebody pointed out, I don't know if it was Ed or somebody else in the book, is that probably one of the reasons that people in government were afraid of these units is because a lot of people in government have personal stuff to hide.
And,
you know, they don't necessarily want these star psychics being in a position where they have something on them. I guess that's true, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, but you have to, and it's the same problem that everybody worries about the NSA now, for the same reason. Is your privacy going to be invaded? And that's one of the fears people have of psychics and mediums in general, is how much information they could actually get on you. If we admitted somehow, that psychic ability is real, all of a sudden everybody thinks that, well, suddenly there will be all these psychics come out of the woodwork and privacy's gone. I think privacy's pretty much gone anyway.
Yeah,
I don't know that we have to worry so much, and you know, psychics and mediums can't read people's minds the same way that it typically appears in science fiction or on TV or in movies.
Mm.
But that's a real fear. You know, there's also, besides the fear, there is also the issue, and less so in the Soviet Union than here in the States, that when any of the folks would bring up ESP or bring up remote viewing in common discussion, the general reaction, especially from other scientists, and it's gotten much worse, actually, over the last 30 years, it's been very negative. There's been a bias. You have the people who are followers of the Amazing Randi using the phrase woo-woo all the time.
Yeah.
And Ed talked about, after the closure of the Stargate program in 95, Ed and Joe McMonagle, who was the number one viewer for the Army, spent 10 years in Congress, in the Senate, in the halls of the Senate, in the Pentagon, trying to get someone to sign off on doing continued research, especially after September 11th. They wanted to do that, but the giggle factor was so high that these folks were unwilling to put their name to something for fear of political suicide.
Hmm.
I mean, even to this day, there are people whose names are not mentioned in the book who are kind of the heroes of protecting this program internally, and most of these people, as Ed has told me, are retired. They have nothing to lose anymore, some of them towards the end of their lives, but their reputations apparently are still, to them, at issue, and they do not want to acknowledge or have their name put on the program.
Yeah. Well, didn't the U.S. government, you know, box up thousands of documents from the Stargate program and kept them hidden? Yeah.
It wasn't that they were hidden. What happened was, toward the end of the Stargate program, so it would be about the last few years of the Stargate program's existence, thanks to the reshuffling of the budget that the Clinton administration was doing.
Yeah.
It was not directed certainly at this program, but things got shuffled around, as we know. And the CIA ended up inheriting the program from the Defense Department. And the CIA didn't really want it, again, because of the giggle factor. So they commissioned a study of the success of the remote viewing program. And they asked for all this stuff to be boxed up and sent from California, where the research was being done quite a bit, or Fort Meade, where it was being done on the East Coast, and sent to Langley. And they were supposed to actually go through it and make their determination based on all the documentation for all these events, all the tasks that they had. What it ended up happening, as Ed found out, from the person who, one of the people involved later on, the person who actually boxed the stuff up with appropriate classified seals and sent it off to Langley, he checked after the report came out, basically trashing the program, causing the CIA to stop, to end the program. It was actually based on the last couple of years' worth of research, of work, when there were really very few missions even, or tasks even given to the viewers. They didn't even open all those number of boxes, the classified boxes. They were on, still sitting unopened in Langley.
Yeah.
So they kind of did a kind of political hatchet job on the program. And this was, again, the giggle factor issue.
Right.
They just thought it was too much of a political hot potato. One of the things that's interesting that was cited was that 15% actionable intelligence was not enough, considering the fact that the typical rate of actionable intelligence for our normal sources, meaning our on-the-ground, at that time, intelligence gathering, was about the same, with 15%. And they equated it to, why don't we need, you know, we don't need the same, we don't need 15% here, because we already have 15%. What they didn't include there, and this is where the logic falls apart, is these were all tasks of last resort, meaning it would have been a different 15%. It would have been 15% of what was left over after their 15% did all it could over the years.
Right. Plus, why risk human resources and monetary resources when they could do it by somebody sitting...
This program was probably cheaper than the toilets that they bought for the Pentagon.
Right. You mentioned Joel McMonagle, and he, mm-hmm. as you mentioned, is probably the world's best remote viewer. And I enjoyed reading about the little chapter you had on Joe, because he talks about having experiences as a child where both he and his sister were visited by a deceased aunt. And so, obviously, he has some other kind of abilities. Is that something you find common to remote viewers? Do they have other kinds of psi experiences like Joe, or do any of them have any mediumistic ability?
The psychic experiences thing is, that was one of the things apparently they were looking for then when they took that 3,600 and kind of narrowed them down.
Hmm.
So whether or not, as far as the Army program is concerned, they dealt with people who didn't have so much prior psychic experience, it really was directed at doing that. Certainly we know we found people in the general remote viewing population, the people who do remote viewing or who've tried to do it, have not necessarily had psychic experiences. They just simply have not sat down and tried this particular type of ESP.
Mm.
There's actually a great video from a British documentary on YouTube called A Successful Remote Viewing Experiment, and it was conducted at the American Society for Psychical Research back in the 80s. Keith Harari used a production assistant who had not had any psychic experiences from the BBC, sat her down, and she did a remote viewing experiment on camera, and she just did phenomenally well with the
right.
process. So we have an aptitude. As far as the mediumistic ability, I haven't talked to any of the... I know that the two remote viewers from the program I've spoken to, or actually three now I think of, have not necessarily had, other than a near-death experience that Joe had and similar experiences that some of the others had had, nothing on the mediumistic front. More of a spiritual experience, certainly.
Right. One of the interesting things in reading about the Russians, where they're always talking about developing these psychotronic devices, it seems like science fiction stuff, but these were devices to control minds of people in mass?
That was the intention and the concept here. Psychotronic, mind machine, in that sense, it's kind of a psychic, or not even psychic, but mind electronics is what they were looking for. The Soviet Union was basically very materialist-based. You couldn't really talk about things that were non-materialist, and even the psychic stuff had to be put in that context. And so the call had gone out to see if they could develop devices that could, be powered by the mind, so psychotronic generators that would either capture energy and be used in other ways, or would actually enhance the mental energy of a person to do psychic things. Or psychotronic weapons, which included mind control devices that would allow someone using the device to control the mind or more influence, not necessarily control, the behavior and minds of others. And there's some stuff written in the old book, Psychic Discoveries Behind the Iron Curtain, talked a lot about these psychotronic weapons and generators and things that they were trying to develop. And it was claimed in what we heard here in the West that they had serious success in that area, which partly is sort of what kind of caused the programs here to start in the States, because people were afraid that the Russians were actually way ahead of us in that on that front, even though
right.
they weren't.
Yeah, I mean, that whole concept, like a psychotronic generator where you store psychic energy, you know, it brings up something that you might see in Ghostbusters, right? I mean, you're storing energy in a box.
It's an old science fiction concept. I mean, people talk about that sort of thing. You know, the mind enhancers, things like that. Those are old sci-fi concepts.
Yeah. You know, and you mentioned, you know, in Russia, of course, with that materialistic viewpoint where they frowned upon things like this, but I read in the book at one point that Brezhnev was not well. Apparently he was addicted to painkillers, and they brought in a healer. And the healer, they think helped him a lot. So I guess it goes back to that the last resort thing. So what the hell? I mean, we tried to help.
Except culturally, you know, the thing is, the Russians, we have this kind of skewed vision of the Russians, especially the Soviets. You know, that in some respects is propaganda on our government's behalf, you know, the godless communists. That phrase was tossed around an awful lot in the 50s and 60s. And in fact, they're not godless communists. You know, there are ancient Russian Orthodox churches like a couple blocks off of Red Square. And in fact, it's fairly well known in Russia today and in the Soviet Union previously that Stalin used to go to church a couple times a week.
Right.
So, you know, this whole idea of... It was a separation of church and state to an extreme, perhaps, but the way they would describe, you know, healer work does energy work, and energy is a physical thing, it's a material thing, even though, you know, we don't see it. So that still can fall into that, and culturally the Russians certainly had a long history of healing and folk healing and those kinds of traditions.
Mm. Yeah, and that's something I got out of reading ESP Wars, is that, I mean, we don't think of remote viewing as being some sort of a spiritual endeavor. It seems, you know, very clinical in its approach. But a lot of the people involved in the Russian program seem to be talking very spiritually. Because you think, I mean, the nature of the work, you know, suggests, you know, these internal and external connections to these unseen forces. So, I mean, is that common? Do you find that remote viewers contemplate this bigger picture, or is that just the people that were into the book?
It seems that a lot of them do. You know, the ones I've talked to and the ones colleagues have spoken to and what Ed's told me is I think a lot of them do. You know, not everybody shares intellectually a spiritual component, but emotionally a lot of them do seem to have that.
Yeah.
You know, I found it really interesting that the person who wrote our foreword, General Nikolai Sham, who was the deputy director of the KGB when the Soviet Union fell, gives this incredibly spiritual, positive message going forward. And it just makes you wonder about our views of everybody over there.
Yeah, I also enjoyed when Savin, you know, General Alexei Savin, at one point they had predicted a specific earthquake that was going to occur.
Yeah.
And the government...
Well, I love the interchange between Savin and Ed May, because Savin trained remote viewers, like over 100 remote viewers in the Russian military, and they trained them to make sure they had military training also, and many of them ended up in the tanks in the front lines in Chechnya to keep the tank, you know, keep the Russian military safe.
Right.
Knowing what was going to, you know, where things were, what was going to happen. Of course, Ed's exchange with him was, you know, putting him in the tanks on the front lines. What is it about remote that you don't understand?
Yeah. Well, I also like when the way he was describing when he made that prediction about the earthquake, Savin, I'm talking about, and the government relied upon the information and took action, but then said to him in no uncertain terms that you damn well better be right or else. You know, I guess it's dangerous business when you predict the future for the government, right?
Or for anybody, you know. If you were, you know, we see that in situations all the time with thrillers and other movies where somebody comes in with a warning for whatever reason and says, you know, you have to evacuate, and they're always told you better be right or else.
Right.
Because we're getting all these people. You know, that's a normal reaction regardless of where the information came from, whether it's an earthquake or, you know, a bomb in the building for that matter.
Yeah, you're right. We're going to go to a break, and when we come back, we'll talk a lot more about ESP Wars. We're talking to Lloyd Auerbach, and his website is mindreader.com. So stay with us, and we'll be back in a few minutes.
Starseed Gems Studios in Cocoa, Florida, fuses cremation ashes within art glass, making beautiful stones. The ashes are visible in the darkness and resemble a beautiful night sky. Starseed Gems, developed by the parents of a young man who passed away, are set in hand-sculpted silver and gold settings. Prices start at $150. Visit www.starseedgems.com or call 321-632-7770. That's www.starseedgems.com or 321-632-7770.
It is with great pleasure that we announce the formation of the Wimbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential. Dr. Julie Beischel, Director of Research at Wimbridge and one of the premier investigators in the field of mediumship research, reports that the team at Wimbridge will continue pursuing the many unanswered questions that remain in the field of afterlife science. Please go to www.windbridge.org to learn more about this groundbreaking research institute. That's www.windbridge.org.
Perhaps you have heard that there is scientific evidence of an afterlife, but you are confused. Plan to attend a landmark convention in Durham, North Carolina, November 8th and 9th, and let's clear up that confusion. Let an esteemed group of scientists from prestigious universities and institutions show you the way. This will be a gathering of the top organizations that have been researching afterlife evidence for decades, all coming together for the first time. Whether you want to learn about reincarnation, mediumship, apparitions, deathbed visions, near-death experiences, or phone calls from the dead, this is the place to be. The weekend will also include demonstrations of spirit communication by Forever Family Foundation certified mediums. Click on the events page at our website, foreverfamilyfoundation.org, to learn more about the conference weekend and the many additional events before and after the conference. Or call 631-425-7707 for more information.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
If you are just tuning in, our guest tonight is Lloyd Auerbach. Our sponsor is Starseed Gems. They're the proud sponsors of the 8th Annual Afterlife Conference this year, November 8th and 9th in Durham, North Carolina, and they could be found at starseedgems.com. If you're a business interested in advertising on our show, please contact us via email at radio@foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call the office at 631-425-7707. Before we get back to our show, we have some updates for you. We want to let you know that you can financially support the work of Forever Family Foundation, a 100% volunteer, not-for-profit organization, without sending us a single pretty penny. When shopping on the internet, think of us before you go to Amazon, and instead go to foreverfamilyfoundation.org and use the Amazon link to get to Amazon. If you add that one simple step to your shopping, a dollar percentage of everything that goes into your shopping cart will generate a donation from Amazon to us. And what if you don't shop on Amazon? That's not a problem. There's another way to be certain that almost all your website shopping produces a donation to Forever Family Foundation. Visit iGive.com. It's free. Name Forever Family Foundation as the charity of your choice. And just like with Amazon, a portion of your spending results in a donation to Forever Family Foundation. Once you set it up, each time you shop on the internet, iGive.com will automatically send us a donation when you shop in one of their more than 1,400 online stores that you're probably already shopping in, like Adobe, The Gap, Home Depot. How about Sony or The Body Shop? So please take a few moments when you shop to show us that you care. And plan to get yourself to Durham, North Carolina for the biggest and best Afterlife Conference ever on November 8th and 9th. We have a couple of other things going on in Durham at the same time. Starting on Thursday, November 6th, we have a day at the Rhine Research Center with a spoon bending party. Friday, November 7th is Namaste Day, and admission is free to the exhibition hall, which goes from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. There's also a special luncheon and a dinner you can reserve, which will include Forever Family Foundation mediums and authors Jan Mayer and Rebecca Anlo Cicero. Saturday evening, we have our annual Night of Mediums with a medium conducting spirit communication for your table of 10 only for the 2 hours following dessert. And Sunday evening, we have a very special dinner, Out of Your Mind Experience, featuring Professor Paranormal. Reading your mind? Maybe. Come see for yourself. And on Monday, our Medium Monday includes lunch and runs all day for anyone interested in mediumship, studying mediumship, or conducting business as a medium. And those are my announcements. We're back to you, Bob.
And are we divulging who Professor Paranormal is?
I'm going to leave that up to you and Lloyd.
Professor Paranormal, a.k.a. parapsychologist Lloyd Auerbach, will be conducting that. And as Fran mentioned, Lloyd will be one of the presenters at the conference, so we hope to see you there. Lloyd, another interesting thing from ESP Wars, when you talked about Boris Ratnikov, one of the Russian officials researching, he said something interesting. He was talking about trying to get psychic information because there was a conflict between Yeltsin and his VP. And he said, we talk about future information, it only gets so far. There are many probable ways that things can unfold, many possible futures. Something that we hear a lot from psychics and mediums, that the future is one of many possibilities. Physicists, I mean, is that something that you believe as well, that the future has many different pathways?
Absolutely. The research has actually shown that in many respects the future is not specific. It's kind of cloudy out there, almost like the position of an electron until you observe it. And all of our decisions, everything that we do kind of changes the way things work. So in some respects, a psychic going more than a few seconds out or even a few minutes out, except for large-scale events like an earthquake, which has nothing to do with human decision-making, that's kind of a fixed point. Those things, we can't really predict things accurately for the reason that as soon as you give information out there, you potentially affect that future that might be happening. Mm. So you can kind of calculate the odds. And a lot of psychics I've worked with over the years have said very basically that they can tell you what the projection looks like now because they're picking up the most probable thing that's going to happen. But as soon as I give you this information, you could make some choices that make that not happen anymore. Or could bring it into being, you know, like the self-fulfilling prophecy in some respects.
Then there's the spiritual side to that, because Ratnikov also said that sometimes we are not given key information about the future because of your level of spiritual development. So that's like inferring that the universe takes steps to protect humanity. So What do you think?
It's hard to know. I mean, this is the same thing as when people ask me about why people stick around as ghosts, why some people do, because most people don't. Most people move to the other side. and there seems to be certain something personal. That individual has some psychological or emotional issues or reasons for staying. We think that there are some environmental conditions that allow some people to stay, because otherwise we'd have a lot more hanging around. Mm-hmm. But then there's that third component, which is that there could be a plan or a greater plan for the, for people to move on or stick around, and we have no way of knowing if that's the case.
As you reflect back on all the research for the book, did the Russians and the viewers from the U.S., did they want to collaborate to better mankind? I mean, was there, you know, after the Cold War was over, I mean, was did the feelings change? I mean, I guess the remote viewers respected each other, didn't they?
Yeah, they seem to, certainly they, ever since the Cold War's been over, as Ed and Joe McMonagle's been over there a few times. He's actually worked with his Russian counterpart, the number one viewer in Sabin's group. And there's a general camaraderie, because these folks share a certain type of experience in a particular venue, you know, within the military, that is unlike almost any other. And so there is that kind of, it's like the cosmonauts and the astronauts. There's a camaraderie because there's not a lot of people in that club.
Right.
So whether they have, been able to work together, you know, I don't know if they've necessarily set out to work together to better humanity, partly because there's just really been no way to coordinate that. There's no funding at this point on either side to continue doing anything like that.
So when they would recruit these remote viewers, they really wanted to get the best of the best, right? I mean, what kind of process did they use? I mean, how do you go after people that have this ability?
Well, a lot of it had to do with surveying people for unusual experiences in their lives, and they were looking for that. And then it really boiled down to testing people to see if people could do it. So they actually ran people through some actual drills to see if they could do remote viewing. There's not really, at this point, we don't have any other way of doing it. You have to kind of sit people down and see if they can do it. And if they can do it, at least initially, even if it's not so good, you can kind of work up to where their aptitude takes them. But Ingo Swann was tasked at one point with trying to develop a training program to train people with mild ability to get much better, or even train people with really good ability to get even better than that. And it was found that the training things that they did just didn't work. In fact, Joe McMonagle, who's the best, Angela Ford, I think, is a kind of pretty up there, too. They got to a certain level of quality of their information, but they couldn't get any better. So it's almost as if they had an aptitude to hit a certain level, a certain mark, and that was it. And whether that aptitude is genetic, spiritual, or simply based on how we all view Psy, that going any further would have actually kind of created this major boggle factor that really would have made it hard for people to accept, including the viewers. It's hard to know.
You know, sometimes I wonder about it. When all the Psy research, whether it be for healing or intention or presentiment or anything along those lines, so lots of times they'll just use, you know, so-called, you know, average people, students, general public. And wouldn't it be wiser to first isolate, you know, the people that have these extraordinary abilities at a high level? Because, I mean, if it works, it works. I mean, if some people can do it, then the reality is that the phenomena, you know, exists. You know, so why do we need to use people that have, may have some or slight ability? I mean, am I making sense, or is it?
Yeah. Well, you know, there's a history to that, and it kind of goes back to J.B. Ryan in some respects. And we've had a couple of waves of this, and it also goes back to the heydays of spiritualist mediums, you know, the physical mediums especially. The amount of fraud that was rampant with researchers and investigators getting kind of confronted with these frauds constantly, back in the 1920s especially, got to a point where Ryan, when he and William McDougall and his wife Louisa ended up at Duke University and started the parapsychology laboratory, they didn't want to work with gifted subjects because the problem they had was that a gifted subject conceivably could be a phony. And they had to kind of, they were trying to bring all this into the laboratory, and the people, they just couldn't find these people in a way that would eliminate that possibility. So working with average people, because Ryan actually, both Ryans believed, which I believe also, is that psi is distributed amongst the population. There's a lot of people out there that have psychic ability, and he wanted to see if across the boards, average people, or and he used people who claimed that they'd had more experiences, who had abilities, but they weren't professional psychics or mediums at that time. They really kind of brought them into the laboratory and ran them through, as you know, the ESP card tests and the dice throwing tests and things like that to see, to gather a statistical model of what was possible. And that actually kind of worked for a while. And even he was very famous in the 40s and 50s, even in the mainstream. And the American College of Mathematicians even looked at his data and said, unless this is all made up, ESP exists. Not that that really went anywhere.
Right.
But then they did start working with not necessarily gifted subjects, but people in the field did work with people who did seem to talk about having gifts and abilities back in the 60s and 70s. And unfortunately, again, we're confronted with not only fraud or potential fraud, people like Uri Geller and a few other folks who popped up, but the biggest issue was not that there was fraud, but the development of, or the rise of the skeptics, the psychop and those folks, making life hell for anybody who worked with a gifted subject. And while parapsychologists kind of on the sly have worked with gifted subjects here and there, until relatively recently, I'd say it was something that some of my colleagues are still afraid to do.
Yeah. Hasn't changed much over the years, right?
No, I mean, certainly in the remote viewing area, the gifted subject idea, the good viewers, finding good viewers, that's actually been the area where we've gotten a lot of people, not just in Stargate, but also the work Stephen Schwartz has done, Keith Harari did, a number of other folks. They work with people who are really good, some of whom ended up working for Stargate or working for one of the other programs from time to time. But they did find people, and they weren't all military, and you know, they just were people who just sat down and tried these sorts of things. And certainly we see this in the mediumship research that Gary Schwartz has done, Julie Beischel's done, and other people have been doing in the last 15 or so years. So the idea of working with gifted subjects is at least back okay again, even though we're being hammered, not necessarily the same way by the skeptics, but certainly in academia, it's almost academic suicide to mention, if you're not already a parapsychologist, which we're already dead to them. So it's academic suicide for most people who might have a real interest to admit that they're even interested in this, let alone actually doing research in the area.
Right. So you and your colleagues definitely don't do this for the money.
Yeah, you know, it'd be nice if we could do this for the money.
Yeah, I know. It's certainly a challenge, and that's why you all deserve a lot of credit for your persistence and putting up with what you do. But you do it because you believe in it, so...
Yeah, and we're trying to solve a mystery, and frankly, it shocks me the reaction of some people in academia when one of their colleagues or someone else comes out and admits that they're interested in it. It's some of the most unscientific crap heard out of people's mouths, other than the fundamentalist religion people.
Right. I agree. We're talking with Lloyd Auerbach. Again, website, if you want to learn a lot, is mindreader.com. This book, ESP Wars, East and West, not only do you get to read about the remote viewing and other psychic phenomena, but there's a lot of intrigue and history involved. So it's a really exciting book and one that's very informative. So might want to pick that up, ESP Wars, East and West. Lloyd, thanks so much for being with us. We look forward to seeing you at the conference. And for those of you that want to have Lloyd sign a book, stop by at a conference in Durham. Thanks so much, Lloyd.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
We now ask our listeners to please join us in our healing energy circle. May the universe create a channel of healing energy from our participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind as we visualize the healing light upon James Rafferty, Arthur and Bernice Goforth, Andrea, Richard, David Mello, Henry Stark, Johnny Jackson, Andy O'Brien, Tanya Cash, Stanley Mullen, Glenna Irwin, Lynn Austin, Michael Tim, Patty Potter, Eileen Lapata, Wendy Lippo, Barbara Russell, Tom Donahue, Tim Donahue, Phil McPhee, Doug Barry, Brian, Nita, Karen, Eddie Roll, Tracy Lee Nash, Jean Lash, Vicki Steffi, Mark Barron, Rita Springer, David Haith, Barbara Petillo, Julie Beischel, Marianne Pierschke, Jeanette Davies, Rachel Skandarian, Kimberly Saavedra, Ann Hutchinson, and Donna Mello. Now let us, as one consciousness, give our energy of loving thought by praying like this: to love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment. And now it's time for us to say,
our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.